ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। टुडे वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 15 entitled Narad and Angira's Instruction to King Chatraketu, text 20. Tadevate param jnanam dadami gruhamagatah jnatva nabhi nivesham te पुत्रमेव ददाम्यहम्। तदैव ते परम ज्ञानम् ददामि गृहमागतः ज्ञात्वा नाभिनिवेशम् ते पुत्रमेव ददाम्यहम्। Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When I first came to your home, I could have given you the supreme transcendental knowledge. But when I saw you, that your mind was absorbed in material things, I gave you only a son, who caused you jubilation and lamentation. Since there is no purport, we'll go to next three verses. Aduna putrinam tapo bhava taivanubhutaye evam dara gruharayo vivida aishwarya sampadaha shabdayashra vishaya chala raja vibhutayaha mahirajam balam kopo bhrutya matra srujjanaha sarve api surasename शोकमोह भयातिदः गंधर्वनगर प्रख्यात स्वप्नमाया मनोरथः। ट्रांसलेशन। माय डियर किंग, नाउ यू आर एक्चुअली एक्सपीरियंसिंग द मिजरी ऑफ अ पर्सन हु हैज सन्स एंड डॉटर्स। ओ किंग, ओनर ऑफ द स्टेट शुरसेन, वंस वाइफ, हिज होम, द ऑपुलेंस ऑफ हिज किंगडम and his various other opulences and objects of sense perceptions are all same in that they are temporary. One's kingdom, military power, treasury, servants, ministers, friends and relatives are all causes of fear, illusion, lamentation and distress. They are like Gandharva Nagara, a non-existent place that one imagines to exist in the forest. Because they are impermanent, they are no better than illusions, dreams and mental concoctions. Purport. This verse describes the entanglement of material existence. In material existence, living entity possesses many things: the material body, children, wife and so on. One may think that this will give him protection, but that is impossible. In spite of all these possessions, the spirit soul has to give up his present situation and accept another. The next situation may be unfavorable, but even if it is favorable, one must give it up and again accept another body. In this way, one's tribulation in material existence continues. A sane man should be perfectly aware that these things will never be able to give him happiness. One must be situated in spiritual identity and eternally serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a devotee. Angira Rishi and Narad Muni gave this instruction to Maharaj Chitraketu. Reading in this Srimad Bhagavatam, a section where the story goes, as Maharaj Chitraketu gets a son, and eventually his stepmothers, they poison him, And as he keeps lamenting, now again Angira Muni and Narad Muni have appeared on the scene and they are instructing Maharaj Chitraketu. So the first verse, which there is no purport, but it's very instructive for the preachers to understand that when Angira Muni says that when I first came to your home, I could have given you the supreme transcendental knowledge. But when I saw your mind was absorbed in material things, I gave you only a son who caused you jubilation and lamentation. That means preacher knows how to impart transcendental knowledge according to the capacity of the recipient. Like as a teacher, will always teach as per the capacity of the students. And if he is teaching some difficult subject, then if he sees the student is not able to understand, then he goes much more detail and keeps explaining. So similarly, when Angira Muni saw that at present moment he is so absorbed in material things that he can learn only by experience, so I had to be patient so that he will get the experience and then later on he will have open mind to my main message. This is how all the great preachers they do. Because the sages are emotionally steady and renounced. And that doesn't mean that they expect others also to be in that way. Narad Muni, Angira Muni, they were at a very high transcendental platform. And when they saw this Maharaj Chitraketu is temporarily bewildered by the material attachments, they were patient. Didn't expect that others also should behave same way the others had, same way that they had. They had emotional stability because of the transcendental knowledge which they had. So they recognized that other people have their attachments and that's going to be different from ours. Like preacher has to understand that now he may be at certain stage and the people to whom he is preaching, they may be having their own attachments. And it's quite alright because they don't have the proper knowledge, they are having that kind of attachments. So consequently, we have to tune ourselves to the moods and feelings of others. And this is how a preacher does. Though he may be at a high elevated platform, he changes his mood, comes down, and quickly starts adjusting how he relates to others. This is how a preacher has to adjust himself to the people to whom he is preaching and elevate them from whatever level they are slowly, slowly upwards. So he is like a captain who maneuvers a sailboat. So the expert captain will immediately test the wind and adjust his sail accordingly to the current conditions in order to get where he desires to go. Now he will not keep complaining that wind is not favorable, it's moving against, I have to go forward, the moving wind is moving in the reverse directions, so how I can go forward. Now whatever may be the unfavorable condition, he will adjust himself so that he can reach to the destination. So that's one has to understand that we have to be very, very sensitive to the feelings, needs and wants of the person. Like Narad Muni dealt with different people in different way. We read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where Lord Chaitanya himself narrates the story of Mugari, where we see the expertise of Narad Muni, how he elevates a person who was a tribal and his whole life was full of violence, killing animals, and not only just killing, but killing them in a cruel way. And that's how he received the knowledge from his father. So in order to elevate him from that lowest platform, the first thing that Narada Muni said is that you break your... And the first thing he said that, if you want to kill, don't kill them halfway. Because if you kill them halfway, the animal suffers and dies painfully. So if at all you want to kill, then just kill in a straight away. So you will have less pain. So this was the first lesson where he started thinking that what's the difference between killing halfway and killing full way. And that's how the whole dialogue started. And as he became more and more receptive, Narada Muni gave the main instruction is just give up your bow and arrow and take to devotional service. And in some other circumstances, in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we see that there were Nalakuvar and Manigriv, where Narada Muni didn't give any chance to them, he straight away cursed him. That you are so engrossed, it's beyond any dialogue or beyond any you are so much thickly covered that straight away I have to give them a curse. But the beauty of the curse of a sages is that it's ultimately our benefit. Because Narada Muni wanted to end their life of sense gratification. And that's how he cursed them in such a way that they become a tree. But they become tree in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, where they had a fortune of watching all the Balya Lila of Lord Sri Krishna and getting purified and ultimately elevated to the supreme position. So the preacher will adjust himself and bring out people from whatever the lowest stage they are up to the highest transcendental knowledge. Because he has to take people out from their own material consciousness and bring it upwards and upwards. Because most of the time, all of us are self-centered. Materialistic person always thinks about himself. And to some extent, even though we may become devotees, our mentality also, initial stage, or even after quite some time also, remains the same. That we are mostly concerned about ourselves and not others. So typically, I received one email in which this mentality was very nicely stated. That how a typical person, materialistic person behaves. That it was stated that if I like it, then it's mine. Okay. And if there is a thing, if I can take it away from you, then also it's mine. Or if I had it while ago, then also it becomes mine. Whether I am the owner or not, that's a different thing. Just because I had that thing for a while, I consider that thing as it's mine. Or if I say it's mine, it becomes mine. Or it looks like it's mine. Then that thing becomes mine. I don't have to be owner. Just because it appears like that thing I had and your thing also appears to be like that, so I feel that's mine. Or if I saw it for the first time, it's mine. Irrespective of the fact and who is the owner of it. Or if you are having fun with it, then it's definitely mine. If there is something wonderful thing in this world, you are enjoying, I don't have it, that somehow or other, I must maneuver in such a way that I get that thing. But this is how the typically all the material world behaves. Or if you just lay it down that thing, it's mine. I will sit to it that somehow or other it comes to me. And if it is broken, then it's yours. Because what's the use? I will keep with me. So whenever a materialistic person finds some interest in that activity, he will just try to grab it for his own sense gratification. That's how everybody is self-serving or self-interested. And the whole consciousness of a materialistic person is, it's just like if you take an arrow, which is a point is towards inside. It's just like winds inside and comes to the point, that is the self. So this, when the self winds inward, wrapping, it becomes tighter and tighter around oneself. Whereas the sages, there it winds outwards, that is unravels. That means it begins from the middle, from them, but the arrow goes outward. That means they always keep others first in their life. So what's a typical attitude of a person? Is like if you see, observe any child, because it doesn't have a proper knowledge, whatever comes in his possession, always it grabs it and uses it for himself. Because he is not that much matured about principle of sharing. As he grows, slowly, slowly he understands that there is a joy in sharing also. And then when he gets proper knowledge, he comes to the proper platform. So though always we have me first attitude and use that position for our personal benefit. Whatever position we'll have, we'll try to exploit in such a way that how I benefit in this material world. And rather opposite, the sages we find is they have others first attitude and they will always use their position for serving the people, taking responsibility of spreading this transcendental knowledge to those who need. And they become an example for the society, so that society can follow in their footsteps. And whatever they do, they will always give credit to others, that is their own previous acharyas, or to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is how typically we can divide the whole society into these two kinds of attitudes. Because normally, now we have lot of self-ego, that's called a false ego, in which we not only think much about ourselves, but also think a very little about other people. So one hand, we think ourselves as a great, and other hand, even if other persons are qualified, competent, a very skilled, but we think themselves as a very little. This is how our typical nature behaves. But one has to understand that what will bring fulfillment in my life? Is this attitude of self-serving, self-centered, will it give me ultimate benefit? Or if I change a focus of my life, I will be happy. Because if you see, if the person who is entirely self-focused, he always feels restless and hungry. He can never be happy, because all the beautiful things in the world, he wants it for his own sense enjoyment. So when we have this kind of selfish attitude, we actually cheat ourselves. That's why it is said that no man is more cheated than selfish man. Because he feels he is cheating others, accumulating so many resources, but in long run, actually, he himself gets most cheated in the life. here Narad Muni, Angira Muni is saying that I could have given you the transcendental knowledge. But since you were not prepared, I had to wait so that you can learn by your own experience what a typical nature of material world is. But I wanted to wait so that you learn by the experience. When Srila Prabhupada also stated this point when he was narrating about his young life to his disciples, he was saying that I had a small son and he was very restless. And I had a small table fan in my house. And as a child, he didn't have a proper knowledge. He always wanted to go and put his finger in that fan. So many times they tried to stop him, but he would always go. So one day when he was trying to go close to the fan, Prabhupada's friend was there in the house. So he said, okay, what you do is switch off the fan. And when fan was switched off, when his speed became very slow, he said, now you'll let your son go and touch it. So the moment they allowed him to go near the fan, he put his finger inside the blades and he got slight injury, mild touch. And then he went away from it. And afterwards they switched on the fan. And they told him, now you go close to it. So immediately child was not ready to go close to the fan because it had experience. If I put my finger in the fan, it hurts. So similarly, Angira Muni wanted Chitraketu Maharaj to experience this. What's the nature of material world? Then his heart will be ready for receiving the message. As an intelligent farmer will not just throw his seeds on a barren land or on the rock, because they know it will not fructify there. For that, he works hard. He will till the land, he will water it, and at the right time, he will sow the seeds. Then it germinates properly and a big tree comes out. So similarly, the sages work upon the hearts of ignorant people. And when they become fertile, that's at right time, they will put the seeds. So here Angira Muni was preparing Maharaj Chitraketu to receive the message. And what's the message? Is that he was trying to impress upon the minds of Chitraketu Maharaj that why it's not possible to enjoy in the material world. So the first thing is that this material world is such where our nature is not for the enjoyment. Our nature, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu defines this, a Jivaya Sarupa Krishna Nitya Das. That means our real nature is serving and we get joy in serving. Instead of that, when a living entity in this material world tries to enjoy himself, it suffers because it's trying to do something against his own nature. And then second thing is, a person who made this material world did not design it for material enjoyment. We can understand that somebody is suppose making a cake and somehow or other he forgot to put sugar in that. Then you take any side of that cake, it will not taste sweet. It will not be sweet because a person who made it didn't put sugar in that. So it's not that my piece is not sweet, that maybe other's piece may be sweet. It won't happen. Because the whole cake is like that. There is no sweet in that. So no matter what piece you get it and try to enjoy, it will not be sweet. So similarly, the creator who created this material world did not put this kind of pleasure in it. So no matter how we try it, we won't be able to enjoy. Because the creator has given us this supreme transcendental knowledge in Bhagavad Gita and in Srimad Bhagavatam, where it's written how this material world is a source of misery. And because it's not designed like that, no matter how you try for it, it's not going to give you real pleasure. And then in this material world, by our common sense, we can understand that there is a scarcity of sense object. In economics, this is what they teach us, that there are so many wants and then so many demands. And how they can adjust? No matter how much planning they do, they won't be able to match it. Because in this material world, the Lord has provided for everyone's need. But it's not sufficient for one man's greed. When we read in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the episode where Vamandev goes and begs to Bali Maharaj, and Bali Maharaj laughs at Vamandev's request of 3 steps. He says, "You are such a small figure and you are asking your tiny 3 feet, how much land you can get in these 3 feet? So in reply to that, Vamandev replies that if there is a greed in the heart to that person, even if you collect all the gold, all the jewels, all the silvers in this material world and give it to him, still will be less for him." So that's why what we have to understand, that you may want to enjoy, but the objects of sense enjoyment are less in this material world. And another thing is, if it is not in your destiny, you will not get it. And you may be a prince, and a prince may have like so many foodstuffs to eat. Until recently, we had kings, and then so many, they were called as, when the Britishers came and they ended that system. And still we could read in those histories how those people used to stay, how they used to live such a royal life. So many times, like, there's a descriptions of Nawabs, you know, who would be such a lean and thin fellow. He would come to his dining room and there will be a table full of all foodstuffs, of varieties of sabjis and varieties of sweets and sour items. And this lean and thin fellow, how much he could eat? His full body is full of all vices and material diseases. Now he would just take spoonful of 2-3 items and then he would go away. And all his servants would then feast upon the remaining things. So, as per your destiny, you may have so much of wealth, then you can afford to have so much of foodstuff. But if there is some disease in the body, how much you can enjoy? If you are destined to get something, even if you go to the forest, still you will get it. And if you are not destined to eat, you may be in your home and a big feast may be in there ready in your home, but if your stomach is upset, what you can eat? At the most you can take some curd rice and not beyond that. So that's how our destiny plays a role. That you may have so many things, you may want so many things, but if destiny doesn't want you to eat on that day, no matter how much you try, you won't get it. And you may be the remotest corner of the world, deep, dark jungle, and still you will find some foodstuffs to eat. As some of our book distributors who were distributing books in African countries, in that jungle, they found once they were traveling deep inside the forest, and it was very remote area, not accessible to anyone, and they went right inside a small village with a very few houses there, and that book distribution party was trying to find some residents where they can stay. And some other, they were told that if you want to stay, go to this village school teacher's house. He is a nice person, he will accommodate you. And the moment they entered in that house, they saw that he was a devotee. Because once when he went to the city, he met devotees, he purchased a set of books from them, he brought it to his home, read all these books and started following whatever stated in that book. He converted his house into a temple. So there's only one contact, just he got the books and he started following. And next, after a few years, this devotee went to that village. So what was the possibility of these book distributors to able to stay in a temple and get prasad in that deep jungle? But if in your destiny is written that you would get prasad on that day, you will get it. Though you may be in such apparently adverse conditions. So that's why the scriptures, they give us proper knowledge. When Arjuna was in such bewildered condition, Lord Sri Krishna gave him the first lesson, which everybody has to understand, that what is a difference between the spirit soul and the body. And anyone who has this knowledge will be able to discriminate in this material world. Some of us may have theoretical knowledge, but when we get actual realization, we can benefit that knowledge in a better way. That's how the Bhagavad Gita states the principle of transmigration, by which we can understand, if the life is so short, now why should I take so much of pain to make only my body comfortable? Because the person who has a knowledge, he understands there's a spirit soul in this body. He progresses through boyhood, youth, old age, and at the time of death into another body. And a self-realized person is not bewildered by such a change. This is the exact knowledge which Angira Muni wanted to impart it to Maharaj Chitraketu, that you are lamenting on bodily conception. Because whatever happiness that you get on this bodily conception of the life is non-permanent. So whatever happiness and distress is there, it's just like a season, and it arises from the sense perceptions. And one must learn to tolerate it. And it's further stated in Bhagavad Gita that how, as a person puts on new garments, giving up the old ones, similarly, soul accepts new bodies, giving up the old ones. So all this knowledge is given in Bhagavad Gita for us to understand that how we are different from our material body, our coverings. And we have to understand what are the characteristics of the soul, that how the soul is unborn, it's eternal, it's ever existing, it's not slain when the body is slain. Because the soul is qualitatively equal to the Supreme Lord. And that's how the body may go into various changes. It may have a birth, it may grow, it will produce its byproducts, then it deteriorates, and ultimately it will die. But we have to understand, as far as soul is concerned, that soul doesn't have any byproducts, nor there is a past, present or future for the soul. Because anything which has birth will die. But because the soul is unborn, that's why the concepts of past, present and future will not apply. And that's why the soul never deteriorates. So this is how the real knowledge is stated in the scriptures, which helps us to understand that how the living entity in this material world has to work. Understand this basic principle of that we are not this body but the spirit soul, then only we'll be able to progress in our spiritual life. So how a devotee works, what is his consciousness? He rightly understands the difference between the two. And that's why he just does the needful in this material world. The example given is, as a businessman, if he is sitting in a car, so that he may have the understanding of how the car works, how the engine works, and he may give instructions to the driver, he may give directions to the driver, but his main focus is on his business. So even if he is sitting in the car, giving all these kinds of directions to the drivers, he is always thinking about the business. Because the activities of the bodies and activities of the soul are different. So this is how living entity, even though it may appear, it may perform so many acts in this material world, but he can focus his mind always on the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. As a businessman knows that his real focus is on business, and he may do the needful as far as taking care of the car is concerned. So similarly, a devotee knows the difference between the activities of the soul and the body and works accordingly. Another example is given of that of earth. And we see that there are so many earthen items that we make, earthen pots and so many things. It appears, breaks and disappears and mix with the earth. So the temporarily the earth may take some forms, those forms get destroyed and again it goes back to the earth. So similarly we get this material bodies which ultimately get annihilated, but the soul inside this body remains unchanged as the earth remains the unchanged. Because why this knowledge is so much essential for us to understand, so that we don't invest in these temporary things. This is the message which Angiri Muni wants to give to Maharaj Chitraketu. There is no point in investing once so much of time and energy in the things which are transitory in nature. If you see, so many people have got life's ambition to build a house, and that's how so many billboards will allure you to buy a loan so that you can have your dream house. And if you just have some habit of visiting some tourist place, you will see that just 300 or 400 years ago, our previous kings, they built so many forts. But what's the present situation? Like you may build a beautiful house, but eventually it will crumble. And that's what it happened. Just 200 or 300 years ago, those forts, kings used to stay, and so much opulence was there. They used to have a golden pots to bathe themselves. So much respect was given and so much facilities were there. But all these big forts they built was eventually crumbled. So how long our small flat can remain? Or you may develop a very fine career, but one day it will be over. Or you may save great sums of money, but you cannot take it with you. All those things, you have to just leave it here and go. That's how so many people who are wealthy, when they die, the first thing their relatives do is they investigate where they had kept the money. And many times they keep their money in Swiss bank, and only that person knows that code number. So what happens is whatever money is there just lies there. Neither their family members or relatives can make use of it. So you may work hard to earn money and save it, but eventually you can't take it with you. Or you may have superb health today, but in time it will decline. So many people have got that habit of building their bodies and feel that they will enjoy. But just look at how long that health will remain. Just 10-20 years. Now we, within these bodies, if you are near 40, you can understand that the things which we could do just 20 years back, we are not able to do now. So what this superb health will do? Eventually, in course of time, it will decline. Or you may take great pride in your accomplishments, but someone will surpass you. I have seen one person who was so brilliant in his career that all his school life, college life stood first in his class. But in the final year, one person scored more than him and he came second. But somehow that he could not digest that failure in the life. And he committed suicide just because he stood second in the exams. Because what happens is that people invest in these things, but they are transitory in nature. So one has to understand what are the real thing in which if he invest, he will reap permanent benefits. So there was a conversation between Yudhishthira Maharaj and one Brahmin in the forest. When Yudhishthira Maharaj loses all his wealth and goes to a forest to stay, Yudhishthira Maharaj was a grihastha and he was so famous that wherever he would go, the people would come. The sages would come in to take the darshan of Pandavas to see Yudhishthira Maharaj. And naturally it would pain to the heart of Yudhishthira Maharaj that I can't serve them. Now I don't have any wealth with me. So many guests have come, how can I serve them? So that would be unbearable pain to the heart of Yudhishthira Maharaj. It's not like he was like any other materialistic person who wanted wealth for his own sense enjoyment. He wanted wealth so that he can serve Vaishnavas. So that time there was a conversation between him and one Brahmin. So that Brahmin was saying that there are hundreds of reasons for fear and lamentation. They can influence the fools, but not a person who is a jnani, a person who is a knowledgeable person. And he says, when the mind is perturbed, the body also becomes hot. We have this experience that sometimes everything is alright, but still that person is not satisfied because his mind is unsatisfied. We can take the simple example, like if there is an earthen pot filled with cold water, and if you take a hot piece of iron and put it inside that cold water, the temperature of that water will increase because you have added some hot thing in there. So similarly, when the mind is disturbed, it will create disturbance in the body. Your body also will not be peaceful. That's why we find that so many people who are millennials, but still there is no peace in their life. They always are fearful, unsatisfied. Why? Because the mind is disturbed So that creates disturbance all over their body. So as a fire can be extinguished with the water, similarly, we can treat our mental pain by real knowledge. And thereby eventually our bodily pain also can diminish. Then let us find out what is the reason the mind or gets the pain. Why there is, what are the causes of the mental pain? Then one can understand the reason for the mental pain is sneha, that is attachment. So when we have this material attachment, it causes fear, it will cause shok, that is lamentation, harsha, that is jubilation, or klesh, that is calamities. So when mind is attached, it will eventually bring these things. So as there is a fire in the stump of a tree, eventually the whole tree gets burnt up. So similarly, if there is a little attachment, asakti is there in our mind, it will burn all our religious life and everything will be ruined. Because everything starts with the small material attachment. But as the tree gets burned with the small fire under it, similarly the small attachment in the heart will ruin one's whole life. So through the proper knowledge, one has to understand that he needs to renounce this unwanted attachments. When the mind is totally non-envious, that's a time it can become steady and free from bondage. Because attachment to one's own family, friends, wealth is removed by a proper transcendental knowledge. And one who has this proper knowledge will naturally control his mind. And then, even if there are so many objects of sense gratification, his mind will not get attracted. As if there is a leaf of a lotus flower and you put water on it, water will not stay. It will immediately move away. So similarly, if your mind is controlled, no matter how many sense objects it will come, it won't influence the mind. It will just go away. So many things will come and go because the mind is controlled. Previously, Angira Muni was trying to explain that if you have a son, you will have happiness, you will have a distress. So similarly, it happens that whenever there is an attachment, and not always we get what we want, the Supreme Lord will give what we deserve. So when we don't get what we want, naturally it leads to frustration. And we have seen that the wives of Chitraketu were pious. It's not that they were irreligious. But just because when they saw that whole king's attention and love is towards only one wife who has a son, and we don't get any attention, they conduct such a sinful act of poisoning an infant child. So this is what happens when we have attachment. We will not hesitate to perform sin, and then eventually we will suffer from the sinful reaction. And one has to understand what is the nature of these attachments. It's very difficult to give. Body may get old, but this attachment will not go. It's like a deadly disease. which completely destroys that person. And only if you give up this attachment, then only you can remain happy. Because we have to understand the nature of this attachment. This attachment doesn't have Adi or Ant. It's not that at the age of 5, my attachments will begin, and at the age of 50, all my attachments will finish. There's no concept of Adi or Antya, Lila, in case of attachments. Attachment will always be there. As the wood gets destroyed by the fire within, similarly, in the mind, if there is a greed, it will completely destroy that person's body. Because we have seen, the person who has got so many attachments, and that's why he works to fulfill his attachments, and eventually, the whole body gets diseased, becomes old, and gets destroyed. And the only thing that remains with him is the sinful reactions which he has to carry and take it over to the next life. That's why we have to see that we may have attachment towards the wealth. Here, Chitraketu had a lot of wealth. In his case, attachment was towards his son. But we see there is the common person gets attracted towards the wealth, because if he feels that if he has a wealth, he can buy everything in the life. But what's the situation of a person who is a wealthy? Is he really happy? Because wealthy person always has to fear from the king, in present context, the government, because he will extract money under pretext of so many taxes. Or so many natural calamities are there, as the water. So sometimes it will become difficult for us to understand that how wealthy person has to fear about the water. But just 2 years back, there was flood in Bombay, and we could see how it devastated so much of property. So if you have a wealth in the one excess rain, and it can wipe you out for your life also. Or many times we see, we build up a big factories, and one fire in the factory, and the whole thing comes to ashes. Or there are enough of thieves, unemployed people in this material world, who will be always trying to get what you have stored. So even if you go to the most advanced countries, you will find the one lock to the house is not enough. Now you have to put 2, 3, sometimes up to 7 or 8 locks to your small flat. Because you have to protect what you have. And there are so many people out in this world who are out to get what you are trying to protect. Or if not, sometimes relatives comes. When you have a lot of money, relatives will come and say, please give me some loan for this business and that business, with no intention of returning it at all. And if you don't give it, they create so much trouble for you. They spoil your name. So many times, a lot of wealth is taken by different relatives also. So the scriptures describe sometimes the position of a person who is a wealthy is such a hopeless, is that of a piece of a meat. Say if there is some piece of meat lying somewhere, if it is in the air, immediately so many birds will come, will try to eat a small piece, and 10 birds will try to snatch it from each other. If that piece of meat is lying on the earth, there are so many animals or insects who will just tear away that piece. And if it is in the water, so many fishes will come and try to finish it off. So wherever you go, whether in the air, earth, or in the water, it's always a trouble. So similarly, a wealthy person will be harassed by the people wherever he is. So that's why it is called the earth, that is wealth, is the cause of anartha, that is ruination. So many times people equate this, that the worldly possessions that we may have, that will give me happiness. But this equation itself is a wrong equation. Because whenever you get more wealth, the greed increases, and more you have, now you become miser. And because you got all this, that increases the pride, arrogance, at the same time fear and frustration. Then what you have got? If you have got so much of wealth, and if this anxieties if you get that are related to the wealth, because the wealth first you have to work hard to get it, then work hard to protect it, and if you spend, it still it gives you distress. So many times people lament, oh, why I spent so much money on this and so much money on that. So while earning, while protecting, and if you spend, that time also you suffer. So the best thing is give up this attachment that is there towards this material thing. Because even if you want to give up the wealth, that also gives you a lot of pain. And if you try to protect it, it acts as your enemy. Because we have seen so many times, like when the bank, the cash is being taken from one place to another, it's heavily guarded. And many times the dacoits, they will attack it and kill a poor fellow who is trying to protect it. So what is his fault? It's not his money. But still, the people come, shoot him and take the whole money. So this is what wealth will do. That if you try to protect it, it may kill you also. So the person who is a real vidwan or real knowledgeable person has no abhilasha or no hankering for these things, because he know the youth or beautiful body, whatever life he has, or whatever precious jewels he has in his locus, whatever aishwarya he has, or whatever association of his relatives he has, these are all temporary. And because of that, he gives up attachment to this. But it's not so easy to give up attachment to these things, because you need a courage to give up these things. If you don't have, and if you say I give up, it's of not much use. But real thing is, when you have, and with proper knowledge and courage, when you want to give it up and use it, what is there with you for a real purpose of serving the Supreme Lord and His devotees, then only it can benefit you well. And that's why now we need the association and guidance of a person who are pure devotees of the Lord. As we have seen in this case, Narad Muni and Angiri Muni repeatedly comes, when is the right time so that I can give this knowledge to this person, and by getting this knowledge, that will remove his suffering and he will be elevated. So that's why the real knowledge, we gain it through the association of devotees. Because the saintly person knows, because of this ignorance, the people for the satisfaction of his stomach and his sex life, they are attracted by so many things, and they simply trying to stock up so many different kinds of same objects. But then they don't understand that how a person whose senses are uncontrolled suffers. Just like if you have seen a horse, that some horses have got such a tendency that they are loyal only to a particular master. If some other person tries to sit on it, first they won't allow you to sit. And if you sit by force, they will drag forcefully to some other way. And then poor fellow had a great difficulty. Now sometimes they will take you in the forest, which may have a thorny trees, and your whole body gets scraped through these thorns. So similarly, a person whose senses are not controlled gets dragged by this, a person who is riding on a cruel horse. He drags that rider through a wrong route, and the person who is riding is brutally suffers. And sometimes he falls down and breaks his limbs. So this is how all these senses will drag you. Because lust will make so many plans, giving you allurements, that only if you get this, you will be satisfied in the life. But then what happens? This hankering is that of, in the rainy season we see so many insects go close to the fire and gets completely destroyed. So similarly, a lusty person gets attracted to the sense object and eventually he gets destroyed. And that's why the proper knowledge has to be there. Because if we act in this material world as per our own whims, immersed in Mahamaya, then we don't have the proper knowledge about the soul. And then we get stuck in this ignorance and in this cycle of karma and then greed. We just keep wondering in different species of life, whether you are an elevated position of Lord Brahma or insignificant blade of grass, you will simply keep rotating in different species of life. So that's how a person who has a proper knowledge, he doesn't get disturbed by events in the life. How he works. We have another incident, similar incidents in Chaitanya Leela, where we see Lord Chaitanya had his eternal associate Sivas Thakur, Sivas, how he lost his son, but because he had a proper understanding, he could pacify himself. So we can compare the story of Sivas Thakur's dead son with the story of Chitraketu Maharaj. So when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was dancing in the house of Srivas along with his all personal associates, there was a loud cry in his house. So Srivas goes out and sees that why there is ladies are crying. And the moment he understands that his son is dead, he immediately tells to the ladies in the house, because Srivas was a grave as well as learned person, and he instructed to the ladies in the house that you do not know the glories of Lord Sri Krishna. Even if once somebody at the last moment of his life hears the holy name of Lord Sri Krishna, that person may be a great sinner, still he will go back to Lord Krishna's abode. And here in our house, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is personally dancing. whom Lord Brahma and all demigods, they serve him, sing his glories. So if somebody dies at this moment, his life is auspicious. So why lament for his departure? We can see that my son has attained a goal of his life. Goal of life is to remember the Supreme Lord at the time of his death, so that we can go back to the spiritual world and resume our eternal service unto the Supreme Lord. Then he further instructs to his ladies in the house that if you can't control your emotions, then weep in the heart. But don't make noise. Because if you make a noise and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes back to the external consciousness, he will stop his dancing and I will be the cause of disturbing his mood. And he further threatens them that if you act like this, I will go and jump in Mother Ganga and drown myself. I will put my life also to the end. Then immediately the ladies, they reduce their crying. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu keeps dancing in the house. And after quite some time, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understands that something is wrong here, because slowly the news comes, one devotee comes to know, he tells to another devotee, like that all devotees dancing, they come to know the Srivas has lost his son. And eventually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also understands that. So that's the time he says, inquires that how long it happened, at what time he left. So the devotee is informed that about 7.5 hours ago, he left his son. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu becomes surprised that why you never told me before. If it happened in this same house and such an important incident, and for 7.5 hours I didn't get this information. And he makes one statement that now how I can give up the association of my this beloved devotees. Of course that time the devotee doesn't understand the meaning of this statement, where he indicates that in future he will take sannyas. But he glorifies Srivas Thakur saying this, because for a father, death of a son is a great blow. In the natural course of time, the son doesn't die before a father. And for father's heart, a son is so dear, and if it dies, it's just like unbearable pain to the heart of a father. We have seen in Ramayana, Maharaj Dasharatha could not keep his life because he was separated from Lord Ramchandra. When Lord Ramchandra exiled in the forest, that pain was so unbearable for Dasharatha Maharaj that he gave up his life. Similarly, we see Jagannath Mishra, his one son took sannyas. He had a dream in which he saw that another son also will take sannyas. He also couldn't keep his life. So such is a great attachment or great emotional bondings towards one's son. And here is a Srivas Thakur. He controls his grief so that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can enjoy. So he exhibits the highest example for us. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just touches the boy. The boy again comes back to the life, similar to this also, where the boy also again comes back to the life and gives the same understanding to the father. The boy says, when he comes back to this external consciousness again, he says that you are the one who control my destiny and who has the power to act against your will. And I have already experienced the days that were allotted for me in this body. And now my allotment is ended. I cannot stop that end. I must go now to the city of another body. And no power is there to stop the destiny of this body. The only desire that I have is that I may not forget your lotus feet. He says that whatever my karma was there, I was destined to get this body, I got this. Now my days are over and I must go to another body. But I again and again bow down to your lotus feet so that I can always have association of you as well as all your intimate associates. And now please permit me to depart. By saying this, the boy again becomes dead. So when all the devotees present there hear these things, they give up their lamentation and then they perform the further rites to the boys. So in these episodes we understand what is the real happiness, what is the real knowledge. The living entity, because of ignorance, develops so many attachments to so many extensions of his bodies, and then eventually he laments for that. Whereas the real knowledge is available to us through scriptures and the sages, where repeatedly this point is stressed, that we invest so much on our temporary material attachments, but eventually they can never give us true happiness. We have a similar incident that how our relatives cannot help us in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. We have a story of Lord Gajendra, where we see that this Lord Gajendra was staying in Trikuta mountain, and such a wonderful description of given of this mountain where I had so many lakes, rivers, and here in all our beaches, the beach is covered with the sand. The description is given that the beaches on those planets were covered with small gems resembling to the sand. And there was, in those planets, there are 2 million trees. Now we can't even imagine those kinds of trees. The forest is filled with varieties of fruits and flowers. And if you go in today's Kali Yuga jungles, if you miss your way and somehow happen to be in the forest, you will hardly get anything to eat. And you will wander and wander and wander, and many times you will find so many thorny trees. But there, the honey would drip from the trees. And this was a wonderful arrangement. And this entire mountain was standing gloriously there, abundant with all varieties of enjoyment available there, beyond our material conception and experience. And Srila Prabhupada writes that we get this information by the scriptures. We may not have actual experience, but scripture gives us this knowledge, not only of this material world, but also of the spiritual world. At the most, we have some experience of this material world. We can go to Himalayas and see the beauty of Himalayas and so many other things. But there is an abundant description available in the scriptures in so many incidences where we can take our knowledge. It's not that we endeavor and depend on our ability to get this knowledge, but our process is simple. We accept the knowledge coming down in disciplic sensation in these scriptures, where the description of material world as well as spiritual world is given. So once when this Gajendra elephant was wandering in the forest, along with his whole herd consisting of his wives, children, friends and relatives. They go to a lake and drink a cool, clear nectarian water. The water was like a crystal clear. Nowadays we are very much afraid of drinking direct water from the rivers, or sometimes there is a lake and a notice will be written, not fit for human consumption. So, but those places the water was such a crystal clear that he had a lot of fun by drinking the water, and then he took his trunk and started collecting a lot of water in his trunk and started spraying in all his wife's children and relatives. So there was a great endeavor to get the water from the lake and just spray it on this. So all of them were getting a lot of enjoyment in reciprocating with each other. But that disturbed the aquatics staying in the lake, and crocodile attacks it and holds his feet so tightly. First the elephant fights, and later on the description is there, when all his friends, wives, they see that he is in such a grave condition that he can't come out. So they try to help him, grasp him from behind, but they find it's useless. The crocodile is very strong. The wives standing on the bank, what they can do? They simply keep crying. The Gajendra elephant sees all my family, children, friends are standing on the bank, but not a single one of them can help him in such helpless condition. And they are trying, but they couldn't do anything. They had so much of good wishes, but still nothing they could do. So this fight goes on for about 1,000 years, and gradually the Gajendra elephant becomes weak and weak his strength, and crocodile, because it's an animal of a water, getting food in the water, becomes stronger. And then one particular time, Gajendra realizes that by will of providence, the circumstances are such that he is completely helpless. He could not save himself, and then he becomes afraid of being killed. Then consequently he thinks for a long time, and then finally arrives at the conclusions that I realize that my friends, relatives, wives could not rescue me from this danger. Now I must take shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. And then he starts offering a prayers to the Supreme Lord, and then Supreme Lord comes and helps him. So the message that we have to understand from this, that what this modern civilization is trying to bring us is, that if I have a nice home and a nice car, then life will be perfect. But to think that this material world can bring happiness itself is ignorance. A simple take care of a car, you may have the most experienced car, but the moment you bring it on the road, at every moment there is a chance of having an accident. You may drive, you may be an expert driver, but someone else on the road who may be a drunkard, and he may just bang his car against you, and you will be no more in a second. But this, the hard fact of life, we doesn't understand. The real knowledge that one has to understand, that this material world is full of danger. So we may try and struggle for existence and try to take care of ourselves, but unless the Supreme Personality of Godhead ultimately saves us from the danger, our attempts will be futile. That is the message the scriptures and the sages gives us, that you are placing your attachment at the wrong place, you are trying to seek happiness at a wrong place, real happiness is available at somewhere else, and you may whole of your life may try to struggle, put so much of efforts, but unless the protection is offered by the Supreme Lord, the real protection will not be available to us in this material world. And we can compare this situation to Maharaj Amrish also. Amrish Maharaj was also so much of wealthy. The scriptures describes he was the king of 7 islands on this earth planet. He had inexhaustible, unlimited opulence. Such position is rarely achieved. If you have opulence, unless you have a good karma, there is no way you can get that. And if somebody has attained such a great opulence in his life, he must be a very fortunate person. But still, what was his consciousness? He regarded this all opulence just like a piece of stone. Because he knew it's all temporary. As this verse describes, that they are like the Gandharva Nagar, non-existent place that one imagines to exist in the forest. Because they are impermanent, they are no better than illusion, dreams and mental concoctions. So he had exactly that understanding, even though he had himself the opulence much better than even a Gandharva can afford. But still, he had a real knowledge that because this is temporary, it's not ultimate benefit for me. So his mind was always engaged in serving the Supreme Lord. And not only this was his consciousness, the same consciousness was there of his subjects. Whoever stayed in his kingdom, nobody desired to go to the heavenly planets. He was so great that whenever he would conduct yajnas, the demigods would come and sit in the audience. So such was his power. But still, like the tendency in the material world is, that if you go for some event, and if important person comes, then you will try to go close to him, try to develop some contact with him, and you feel if I develop contact with great person, I will be benefited. Or many places you will find the people exhibiting their factories or shops, their picture with some famous personality. And they may be there with him for a few seconds, but still they would like to impress. Everybody in this material world tries to go close to the famous personalities or rich personalities, thinking that eventually they will benefit. So in the state of Maharaj Amrish, the demigods would sit in the congregation, but nobody would get attracted because they had no desire to go to the heavenly planets. They were satisfied serving the Supreme Lord. So this we have to understand, that when we have this proper knowledge, then only we will be able to have real happiness in this world. Just to summarize what we have seen today, is the first how Angire Muni uses his expertise in preaching to Maharaj Chitraketu. He patiently waits, lets Chitraketu Maharaj make a mistake, but learn by that mistake. And when right time came, he is giving this real knowledge. In subsequent verses, you will find that the real knowledge is imparted to him, that what is a difference between us and the body, what are the activities of the body, what are the activities of the soul. All the activities of the body are temporary. So if you invest in the temporary activities of the bodily enjoyment, eventually you will suffer. So instead of that, if you have a real knowledge that this material world is full of dangers, then you can come to the conclusion of understanding what is the soul and how the soul can be benefited by rendering devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So thank you very much. Is there any questions or comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna. As the word putra itself in Sanskrit is defined as the punama narkasya tarayati iti. So it was not a crime or sin from the part of Chitraketu. Second, pitu hi putra rupena jayate. So there were so many Brahmin families. If a child is born, they were keeping the name or giving the name of the child's father, means own father.
Yes.
Third.
So what is the relevance of the statement?
Pardon?
What is the relevance of the statement?
No. Punama. So one wants to get relieved from the punama narka.
Yes, then what?
Putra. So he asked for putra. That is what I want to say.
Yes. He asked for the putra, that's fine. But Srimad Bhagavatam gives us further insight into that you may ask for the putra, but you can't become attached to your son. So, though he may be asking for the son, what was wrong in his behavior? He was excessively attached to his son. And he lost the real focus of his life, that is to serve the Supreme Lord. In case of Srivas Thakur also, he lost his son. Being fixed in the transcendental knowledge, it's not that he had a cruel heart. He also had emotions, but those emotions were rightly placed. When a Vaishnava leaves us, we have a mixed feeling. One is lamentation that will not have his association. At the same time, he has gone back to the spiritual world, or he will having progressive life in the spiritual life. So we have this knowledge. What happens typically is, people just keep lamenting on bodily platform, which brings no happiness to themselves or to anyone else. So the main focus of this story is to understand that we unnecessarily should not have excessive bodily attachments. Our real focus of our life is to serve the Supreme Lord, and everything else should be adjusted accordingly. Not just because the putra can do my funeral rites, or he can perform some ceremonies by which I will be freed from certain reactions. That's not the purpose of life. Purpose of life is to serve.
So even though knowing Dasharath Maharaj that he has to lament for the separation of his sons,
The attachment that Dasharatha Maharaj
performed Putra Kameshti Yajna, that is what I want to ask. Because the curse was given by Shravan Kumar's parents, even though knowing that he will have to lament, then why?
So the thing is, it's a natural feeling of a person who is in Grihastha Ashram, like to have a children. But at the same time, their focus of the life is to serve the Supreme Lord. And when, as far as if you talk about Maharaj Dashrath, he has a spiritual feelings. His attachments to his son were not mundane. It's not like when Lord Sri Krishna, when he battles with Shalya, and when the illusion is created, there's a lot of description where Lord Sri Krishna also laments. But those lamentation of these personalities is different from the lamentation of an ordinary person. Those lamentations are not similar. What's your problem is you are thinking Dashrath Maharaj is an ordinary person. His lamentation is similar to that of a common man's lamentation. It's not like that. There is a difference. When common man laments, he just laments on bodily platform. Whereas a person who is a devotee, fixed up in the knowledge, his lamentation is different. His focus of life is different. So apparently Lord Krishna did appear that he lamented about death of his father. But it's not that Lord Krishna can never come under any illusion. But at the same time, it's not that Lord Krishna doesn't have the emotions. So they do exhibit the great spiritual emotions that they have. Is there any other questions? Yes, there's last question behind, then we'll end.
When you talk about serving the God, how is it that we can go about doing it?
How is it that we can go about it?
Yeah.
There are different ways that one can serve the Lord. How you can serve the Lord is stated in the scriptures. What is the scripture? Scripture is the word of God. And in the scripture, we see the Lord and his activities. In the scriptures, it is stated that how the Lord's devotee served the Supreme Lord. This Srimad Bhagavatam is full of narrations that how great devotees served the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So easiest way of serving the Lord is the following in the footsteps of great acharyas. That is the easiest way one can understand how he can serve the Supreme Lord. So the way previous acharyas have served the Supreme Lord, similarly under their guidance, if we serve, our service will be accepted to the Supreme Lord and will be successful in our life. Otherwise, we can go on speculating through our mental concoctions so many ways of serving the Lord and will never arrive at any concrete conclusions. So the simple way of serving the Lord is following in the footsteps of previous acharyas who has shown us the way how to serve the Lord. And simply following in their footsteps, we can get the guidance of serving the Lord. It's just like a child can never write on his own. He needs a person to teach him. The mother will take his hand and say that this is how the A is to be drawn, this is how B stands, this is how C stands, this is how D stands. And then the child understands the alphabets. So similarly, if we have to understand how to serve the Lord, we need the guidance of an expert person who knows how to serve the Lord. So these are those who are senior to us. They help us in serving the Lord. Since it's late, we'll stop here. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.